You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 38 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, September 24th, 2008. And this is a show about technology for anybody in ministry, pastor, whether you be pastor, teacher, staff minister, church leader, volunteer, who wants to be a part of a conversation about how the tools of today can be used to spread the gospel. I'm Martin Spriggs, and joining me today, as usual, is Sally Draper, who wears a number of different hats in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, pastor's wife, mother, teacher, Wells technology trainer, and of course now podcast host. Hello, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. How are you today?
I'm really well. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Thank you.
Sure. Also joining us today, wearing probably just as many hats, I'm sure, is Gail Potratz from New London, Wisconsin. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Martin and Sally.
I forgot to give you your title, Gail. I'm sorry. Semi-regular classroom technology correspondent.
Thank you. Now we are ready to go.
And Gail joins us once a month. And as we all know, the last show of the month means that it's Classroom Technology Day. And we try to keep this as relevant as possible to both the traditional classroom, as Gail teaches in, and that was terrible grammar, but also all educational settings. So that's going to include, we try to include Bible classes, Sunday schools, confirmation classes, etc., etc., etc. So today, on Classroom Technology Day, what I think we'd like to focus on is digital devices, or essentially classroom technology, digital devices that are used in the classroom. So we're going to talk a little bit about whiteboards, computers, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe to kick off the conversation, you guys, the question that I would have, and I think a lot of teachers have that are trying to figure out how to integrate technology in the classroom, is, you know, what's our philosophy as far as, you know, technology within the classroom? A lot of churches and schools think about building a computer lab, where that's where you go, you know, to learn about technology. But I think there's a shift going on, at least from my vantage point, and that's trying to get more and more technology in the classroom itself, where the students do most of their learning. What do you guys think?
I'm with you, Martin. I think there is a shift going on. I think that as we strive to equip our students with those 21st century skills we're always hearing about, the skills that they're going to be expected to have to compete in the marketplace when they complete their education, what we need to do is integrate that technology throughout everything that they're doing, so that they're not thinking of it as a separate component of their education, but they're actually using the tools to foster their education.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree. It's gotten to the point where I think it's really hard to teach the way I want to teach unless the kids all have a computer.
Right.
Doing some things this year with different types of Web 2.0 tools, as we've talked about before. And yeah, we can all go down to the lab. There have been years when I've actually taught my language arts class in the lab. So everybody had a computer all the time. That gets hard because there's not room to do the writing. The computers just take up too much room. But one-on-one computing is the answer to so many things. Everybody's got a computer. You got a little laptop. You take it with you wherever you go. You can group up in a corner here, some kids over there. It is so mobile and so easy, and makes all of this so much easier. So definitely the move is away from the lab, and it's nice to have the technology in the classrooms. The lab is good if you want to teach some basic things to a lot of people at once. Of course, it'd be nice to have that too. But if I had to pick one, I would definitely pick more classroom technology and less lab technology.
So is that, do you have that going there at New London, Gail, where you've got students with computers in the classroom versus the lab?
We actually have both. We have a lab, only because when we built our new school, people thought we really should have a lab. Mm-hmm. But I've always been a proponent of having it in the classrooms. We have like five computers in the classroom, and then we have the lab. Five isn't enough to do what you want to do if you're talking about really immersing kids in with technology and doing this whole thing
right.
Correctly. Everybody needs a computer, so we do have wireless laptops that we can, you know, bring in and haul around and whatnot. So that, to me, is a possible solution to this that we're kind of aiming for.
So that's definitely an investment then that the school has
yes.
to make if you're going to do this, because, you know, kind of the old school way of the computer lab would be, and I've seen this over and over again in a lot of schools, is they try and find cast off computers from corporations or, you know, donors who will bring in, you know, their used computers. You set up, kind of cobble together a lab, which, you know, that's a whole different discussion about how to, you know, whether that's worth it, you know, and the maintenance
that's
issues and
killer.
Headaches, right? Versus making an investment in kind of a mobile cart with, you know, some ruggedized, you know, laptops that are going to last a while, and, you know, the mobility of it with a wireless network is, again, plays right into the hands of good, solid, integrated education and using those tools right where the learning goes on, right at the desk.
Right. There are definitely some problems with that yet. They need to make adapters and batteries that work better, that
okay.
last longer,
right.
because that always happens. Those things, 2 or 3 years, those are done.
Mm-hmm.
And those are expensive to replace.
Right.
You know, those aren't cheap. So that's why I think one of the reasons why people hesitate to go that way is not the initial expense, but the upkeep on those things is quite pricey, too.
Sure. That's probably a great topic for a future show where we could maybe explore some different systems that could be put in place. But I think in general, what we're saying is if you're thinking about redoing your lab, you know, maybe give some second thought to that and think about maybe investing that money and energy into maybe more of a mobile solution that can move from classroom to classroom, or even programs now that are becoming more and more affordable. You know, that's becoming part of a tuition, or, you know, where the student actually is part owner or full owner
right.
of the equipment.
I was going to ask if you wanted to, either of you two wanted to predict how many years it would be until it's just expected that these, you give the parents, this is the standardized computers that we use here, and everybody purchases theirs and brings it and has it with them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you factor in the cost of textbooks
coming.
And such, you know,
right.
and all the stuff that's available online versus, you know, the $100 book that you've got to purchase, I think that's happening, you know, certainly in upper educational levels right now.
Right.
You know, major colleges, it's a no-brainer. In fact, you go to some higher-end institutions, it's a, you know, just part of the tuition. You get a laptop. Some people are giving away iPhones. You know, it's and I think that's coming down the chain, right?
Yep, right.
Even in our well circles, our seminary requires a laptop. I'm not sure if MLC does yet, but mm-hmm. certainly at the sim, they're required to have one.
So, yeah, let's maybe make a note of that and have a more fuller conversation on those kinds of concepts. So let's talk about classroom devices, digital devices. We've got a whole, and it's a growing group of different things that can be used within the classroom. One of them that has been, you know, growing in prominence, and we've had some conversations even on this show about them, is the concept of a digital whiteboard or an interactive whiteboard. We've talked about smart boards before. What do you guys think about their use within the classroom?
Well, we just recently invested in some smart boards here in Sleepy Eye, and we're definitely on the beginning edge of the learning curve in their usage, but already we're just seeing some really exciting results. The kids, of course, are very tuned in to anything that we do on the smart board, and it's just something that really sparks their interest and their learning, you know. But there is a a dedication on the teacher's part to learning to use the tools and modifying their lesson presentations to include that interactive nature with the smart board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should mention here that anybody interested in a smart board can get a discount through the ShopWells program and through a relationship that we have with a local vendor here that can give you a discounted price on smart board purchase and installation. So if you're interested in that, check that out. But there are some alternate strategies too, right, Sally?
That's right. One of our listeners suggested that we research a company called eBeam. We'll have a link in our show notes. Not something I'm familiar with, but it allows you basically to make your own whiteboards interactive with the use of software and some digital devices that pick up where you're writing on the whiteboard and make it have that interactive nature. So, you know, don't ditch the whiteboards that you've invested in and have in your schools, but make them interactive. So lots of other possibilities. I know, Gail, you mentioned that you haven't gone down this path at your school, and there was some caution, you know, there as to seeing what the best tools were.
Right. You know, from past shows, you know that I'm always encouraging people to become more project-based learning, more inquiry learning, and building those types of lessons. And I guess I didn't feel that we as an entire faculty were really all that ready to bring in the smart board. I was looking for some more lesson development with technology before we invested in those and that piece of equipment. And so this fall, I was going to get our first one. And then next year, we have another one budgeted come in at the middle of the year. So, but then I was just about ready to sign on the dotted line. And then somebody told me about this concept called Mimeo boards. And so I know someone that is using one of those right now, and I intend to go and visit in one of our Wells schools here nearby in Green Bay and see how that works. Quite a bit cheaper than the usual smart boards. The way he describes it, it sounds like it has a lot of value. I'm guessing it might not have quite the, like the actual smart board comes with so much teaching software built right in. I don't know if this will have that. So,
what's the technology concept there? How is that different than a smart board? Do you know yet, Gail?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. No, I can't really tell you that. Okay. I'm going to go check it out, but I haven't done that yet.
Right. So, needless to say, there are a lot of different options, I think, that are going to grow up around this concept of connecting what the teacher is talking about in this traditional whiteboard model and making that more capturable and more interactive with the web and the internet. I think there's all kinds of possibilities there.
Right. Absolutely. And I just feel with their expense, you know, you really have to justify that expense. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. I have been in schools that are very excited to have them, and I've seen them used as in the morning they have their Word of God lesson and their devotion stuff put up on that. But, I mean, you could do that on a chalkboard, so that isn't really what you want to invest that money in just to have stuff like that happen. You know, you're... the lessons have to go with the smart board. So
yeah, again, it's not technology for the sake of technology. You really it has to solve a problem or enhance the educational experience. You know that.
Right.
The
and on the other hand, people tell me, well, if you got one, people would just take off with it, and you would have better lessons. And that may be true. Also, that would be the flip side of looking at that idea. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that happening in our school. One of our teachers got one, and she's a 25-year teacher, and she is learning all new things, and she is very enthusiastic about it. And it's not just, you know, projecting things, but it's the kids interacting with the information, you know, doing activities around their spelling words or their social studies unit or whatever it is. So there's lots of potential. I think the key to it is going to be the software development for each of the options and, you know, what kind of support, what kind of community develops around it. And I see a lot of that happening with the smart board tool already.
Mm-hmm. So let's migrate the conversation a little bit from the action happening up on the board to the action happening in front of the student on a computer screen. Where is that all going when a student has that, let's say, that laptop in front of them on their desk? What's the experience like? What are they using? How is that happening within the classrooms of today?
Well, I think if you have access to a computer at all times, for one thing, you can really move kids through a lot of things faster. Trekking down to the lab and moving back and forth and going in to set up your stuff in one room and then teaching in a different room, and it's just time consuming. So it speeds things up a lot.
Okay.
And you have your kids, they have their laptops, and you open them up. For example, our laptops, our computers are set in each classroom, are set to the classroom's homepage. Mm-hmm. So there are, that's their homepage. And on there are tools that the kids would use every day. I'll give you an example in our language arts unit, talking about characterization right now. So I have a site that's right in my side panel on my eighth grade page, and kids can go there, and it lists character traits, and you click on the links, and then it describes what that adjective means. Mm-hmm. So when you're writing character sketches or whatever, that's just a real nice digital tool that you can go to and use. It's right there. You're writing, I don't know, what word would describe them? Click here. Do any of these words describe them? What does this mean? Mm-hmm. It's just all real time right there. They can get information so much faster and then do what they're supposed to do with it much more easily. Then on the top of the page, I have my the wikis, the different wikis that we're using are all listed, so they're right on the page too. So they just go there.
So you got all the tools. It's basically, their launch pad for learning.
Right.
So you got, if you're doing blogs, you're doing wikis, you're doing whatever they need to do online. Yep. You're making it one click away.
Threaded discussion.
Right.
Everything can be right there. Mm-hmm. And everybody's looking at the same time. And
so do they have any software installed on the machines that they typically use, or is this all web-based stuff that you use?
I think we're probably like most people. We're going more and more toward cloud computing, so to speak, using more apps that are out there. Although there's a challenge to the in-the-cloud classroom, definitely. We just and I'm working with eighth graders now, and we you need to have an email account to do anything,
right?
So there's your first problem, so to speak.
Why is that a problem? Do you think some eighth graders don't have email?
They don't in my room,
really.
And
right.
And I don't necessarily want them to use Hotmail and Rocket Mail and a bunch of those. So we actually found a site called Gaggle.net, and it's a protected, secure email site that is out there. We use the free version, so we put up with some ads on the screen, but you can get rid of those if you want to pay money, but we don't. So that does a good job for us. They have their email account, and the thing is with those accounts, our rule is that those accounts are to be used for school purposes during the school day. They are not allowed to sit in a room and email somebody and say, "Hi, I'm bored."
Right.
So the teachers can monitor all the email. We have eyes to see every email that's written and the time it's written. Mm-hmm. And like I tell the kids, we have no interest in being the email police. This is not there for that purpose. It's a protective thing. We're trusting you to follow the rules. However, if we notice that there's some things going on, then you'll lose your privileges.
Right.
And after school, we don't care. They can do whatever they want with those accounts. They know they're monitored.
Right.
So, that we could see, if we wanted to, we could look in and see what's going on. And we felt that this is really the first year we're starting out going full-blown with this. And it's just myself and the homeroom teacher in that room that's my teaching partner. And we are trying to be kind of cautious to start out. And we felt this was a cautious way to approach this.
Mm-hmm.
So they have their accounts now.
Yeah, I'm going to struggle with the website now. And there's probably more than one. But just like you can get temporary credit card numbers that attach to your account and then kind of go away after a one-time use. There's also temporary email addresses that you can grab that expire after, you know, a certain period of time. Maybe it's a day, maybe it's 12 hours, maybe it's 24 hours. Mail expire, I think, is one.
Mailcatch.net is another.
Okay, so we'll put those in the show notes as well. But mail expire, I think, works like a lot of the rest of them, where you request the address and they give you, it's typically a funky, you know, URL kind of a thing, and it's used for the express purpose of signing up for these things. And what it does is it avoids all the spam that might come as a result of signing up for some of these services, because it just goes away. You get a lot of the Web 2.0 apps require a response from you. They'll send an email to that email address, and you click on the link and say, yeah, this is me. And then that's essentially why, you know, the only reason you ever use it again. Typically, you sometimes need to reset your password with that email, so make sure you don't lose your password. But I think in general, that's probably another way that students could safely, if they don't have an email address, safely sign up for some of these services and not have to worry about all the bad things that can happen with email addresses.
Right. Just one word of caution there. There are federal rules about websites gathering information from children under the age of 13. So even if they can have a safe email address through a service like Gaggle, if they go to, let's say, make an account at WebPaint to be able to edit a wiki or whatever, it's going to ask them for their age, and technically they should be 13 or older before they create accounts at some of these sites where you can do some of these things. So choose your sites carefully. Like, I know, Gail, you use Wiki Spaces, and they have educational components to that and stuff. Mm-hmm. Just be careful as you choose your Web 2.0 tools that they aren't gathering information from your students in the process.
Gail, do you get, or Sally, do you ask permission from your parents of the students to do some of these activities?
Sign
up for some of these accounts?
Right. We discussed the email one, and decided that our AUP already covered that. Our parents signed that our acceptable use policy for technology includes a paragraph in there about email not being used in school unless the teacher is using it for a project in school, and at that time accounts will be assigned to the kids, and they agree to that there. So we didn't feel we had to go to them, especially as we did this.
Mm-hmm. Would you, that brings up a good point, because I get requests all the time. Would you mind sharing that information with the listeners, that policy
acceptable
document?
Acceptable use.
Yeah.
Oh, the AUP?
Yeah.
Sure.
So I've got a number of them, and some are better than others. So I just got another request to, last week. So that'd be great to see what other people are doing.
Yeah, they probably need to be modified again now that we use more 2.0 tools.
Right.
You're right,
right.
You know. Mm-hmm. So sure, I can send a link to it or something.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I think it is on my webpage somewhere. I'll just send you the link.
Great.
That'd be great.
So in the cloud, classrooms is one thing. We talked about blogging, wikis, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But there are probably desktop applications still out there that are free and education-oriented that could be used. I know we've got a note here on FreeTux. Sally, you're aware of that?
Right, and that's just scratching the surface. There's Tux applications out there for math drill, for typing, and for fun as well. But there's tons of them, and it doesn't have to be kid-oriented necessarily. I mean, I think, Martin, you mentioned when you went to the In the Cloud conference that there was a classroom that was using Google Docs for everything.
Yep.
You know, The world's kind of wide open as far as what kind of applications you can use, but certainly you can find free and open source things that that level the playing field. Your students don't have to, you know, put out money to have the same software at home to do, you know, extensions of their work on their home computers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You mentioned Google Docs, Sally. That's one thing, too, that we intend to use with our kids as we get going here. That's our, hopefully by the end of the first quarter here, we want to move them into that, because our goal with that is that solves the problem of transferring files between home and school. we've done it in a lot of different ways, but we're looking at that as possibly simplifying that whole idea. And, you know, if you've got the computer and you've got internet at home, you can do your work, you can pull it up at school, you know, especially being a Mac school, all of our parents don't have Macs in their houses. Some do, some don't. So it simplifies that whole thing a lot, too. But I want to caution people, just getting into all these and using them with kids as we're trying to do this year, make sure you spend enough teacher time ahead of time. Some of these things seem very simple and user-friendly, but when you actually start creating all the accounts and managing them and have people going in and out at the same time, and, for example, Wikispaces, if you're not careful, it's very easy for a child to overwrite something somebody else just did. So there are a lot of little things like that that really need to fall in place. Give yourself the opportunity to fail a lot when you start, mm-hmm. because there are a lot of challenges. It isn't as, you know, talking about it here, you can make it sound more simplistic than it is. It does take a fair amount to get it up and running.
Right. Absolutely.
Right.
That's interesting because at that Office 2.0 conference, San Mateo School District out in California is, you know, running exclusively through Google Apps. So that would probably be a good thing to read a case study on and see, you know, some of the things that they've been challenged with, because I'm sure it's not all peaches and cream. It's
right.
You know, there are some details that need to be mashed out and figure out how best this can work and what it can't do as well. And I'm assuming that, you know, one is everybody doesn't have internet yet at home, especially
yes.
in some of our rural areas.
Yes, mm-hmm. and that is true for us as well.
Yeah.
Right. But don't let that scare you away.
That's right.
Try something and learn from it and try something different the next time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Well, we should probably wrap up our conversation on digital devices in the classroom. There's a whole other segment that we haven't even talked about video, which is an emerging tool going on within the classroom. I mean, we've been using it for a long time through cable networks and such, but now with the advent of tools like United Streaming and those kinds of things, there's a whole new world of possibilities and lesson planning, even just around, you know, video and audio content. So we'll save that for another day. But we would like to ask our listeners about what digital devices they're using in the classroom. And Sally, we're going to combine this with a little contest this week. Why don't you tell us about that?
That's right. We've been working hard to come up with a contest that our listeners can call in and give us some information on our voicemail line. We've talked about that in previous shows. Our voicemail line has been something we've been waiting to hear from people on. We'd love to include your voice in our Wells Tech podcast. And so if you have an idea about how you use digital devices in your Bible class, maybe your catechism classes, or just your traditional LES school classrooms or high school classrooms, then we'd love to hear from you. Leave us a message on our voicemail line. The number is 414-375-2334. And if you're the first one...
Well, let's not do the first one. That's too easy.
Okay.
we'll give people 2 weeks to do that. How about that? We'll give them 2 weeks
okay.
to call in, and then we'll do a random drawing of those people who have called in and given us some good feedback on their digital devices in the classroom. So that way it's not – the race is not always to the swiftest.
Okay.
It's
very
to,
good.
You know, we
I
want
hope
to.
We hear a lot of entries from people who have Mimio boards and have used some alternative smart board mm-hmm. material. If there's any people out there, please enlighten us.
Teach us.
Right.
We are sponges. We'd love to share that with other
right.
people as well. So tell us what you're doing in your classrooms, whatever
and
kind of classroom that is. So,
what kind of reward do we have prepared for him, Martin?
We are going to give away a store gift certificate to the Wells Tech Podcast Store. And that is, what is it, wellstech.cafepress.com?
Almost.
Oh, sorry.
cafepress.com/WellsTech.
I had it on the front rather than the end. Got all kinds of stuff there. I think we will give away a $15 gift certificate to the winner. And there's T-shirts, there's mugs, there's mouse pads, there's, I don't know what all is on there, Sally. Clocks. I have a Wells Tech podcast clock on my wall. So, you know, the sky is the limit. So next 2 weeks, call in to 414-375-2334. Love to hear from you. We will play your voicemail on the air, and we will recognize you for your worthy service in the Wells Tech podcast community. So please take advantage of that. Let's go to our picks of the week. Gail, you are... guest. We'll consider you still a guest, Gail.
Well, thank you.
What's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is at a site called Glogger. Mobi.
Mobi.
And it's in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And this is a site that allows you to, when you're working with wikis, you know, they give you a little flexibility on how you can create a page, but not a whole lot. So you generally have that menu down the left-hand, the sidebar menu, I call it, down the left-hand side of the page. When you're working with kids, and especially younger kids, it would be nice sometimes to use the large frame on the page and have some images, some icons as menu items that you can click and get to places, whether it be the next wiki page or a document or whatever you need to go to. So this site allows you to create menus that are images and use them in wikis.
It's kind of a particular tool.
I think since it comes from their regular site, their .com site, is all about mobile phones and using images on mobile phones. I take it was probably an offshoot from that technology. But it is very cool because up to this point, you could only do very limited things. You couldn't really do a lot with images and as menu items.
Mm-hmm. So this is one of those mashup kinds of sites where they're pulling information from multiple resources.
Yeah.
Okay. We're seeing a lot more of those with Google Maps and with Flickr and with all kinds of location type sites where you're kind of taking information and matching it up and then making it presentable in kind of a unique way. So very cool.
Yeah.
I like it. Sally, pick of the week.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready for you.
Okay.
I've got a link for our listeners to the NASA Image Gallery. I found this week, and I just was mesmerized by the images that are available for download from NASA. And what's cool about it is basically they're public domain images. They're not copyrighted. Imagine that. Mm. So here you can get an image of...
our tax dollars at work.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of everything in the universe that you could imagine that NASA has explored, you can include that in any of your normal uses of images throughout the web or your personal usage as well. Classroom usage certainly falls in this category. And I was really kind of overwhelmed by all that's here. They have an image of the day. You can get that via an RSS feed. So each day you get fed a really cool image that and with explanation. So you could just do that with your classroom just to expose them to you know, the images that are out there on the NASA site. They have special feature images like on 9/11. They had an image from 9/11/2001 of New York from above, you know, just as a remembrance of that day. They have an awesome search site, nasaimages.org. Cool interactive stuff on their search site, really neat stuff. They have astronomy pictures. They have pictures from the Hubble telescope. They even have videos out there that you can use for different grade levels and things like that. So a real treasure chest, the NASA Image Gallery.
Great. Looks very cool. Mm-hmm. My pick of the week is a hardware pick. Normally we pick software, mostly free software or websites, Web 2.0 types of applications, but I figured I'd throw a hardware one in there. So we're talking about Web 2.0 applications and trying to do most of our computing in the cloud. More and more of these smaller notebook laptops are being produced that are very portable, but very connected. And one of those that has just been introduced in the last 6 months is by HP, called the 2133 Mini Note. It's about half, I'd say it's about half the size of a regular laptop. So if you can picture your keyboard on your computer without the function keys and without the, if you have a keypad without that, and extend that up to the top, that's about how big it is. So it's, I don't know what the exact dimensions are, but it's, you know, maybe 8 inches wide by 6 inches tall, and, you know, it's not even an inch, you know, deep or tall, I guess it would be. They call it a 92% sized keyboard. So that's one of the great things about this particular notebook, that even though it's small, and you know, unlike like the EEPC that's been out for a little while, you know, it's got really small keys, you know, kind of made for a fourth grader. This one has a regular size keyboard, so it's really easy to type on, except for the function keys. Those are a little bit smaller, so that's where they get the 8% out of there. Gorgeous screen. It's a little small. Great speakers. It's a very small, cool design. It's really portable. The price is pretty good too. These prices have been coming down. For the scaled down version, which is the one I've been using, which has a 4 gigabyte drive, and you think that's pretty small, but that supports the Web 2.0 approach, where you're doing most of your stuff in the cloud. It's a 4 gig solid state drive, so it's not a traditional hard drive. It's all, you know, RAM based. So you don't have a lot of space there. You can insert you know, memory cards in there, so you can increase your memory that way, and that's where you do some of your storage if you're not doing it in the cloud. But I think it lists for about $499, and I'm sure those prices are going to be coming down, you know, fairly soon. So for $499, you get I would say this is really optimal for students. Especially students with good eyesight, because the screen is pretty small. Although you can, I think, connect it to an external monitor as well, so you're not cramped up with a small screen the whole time. Although the resolution is absolutely beautiful here, so it's one of the best small screens, you know, that I've seen. So good for students, good for mobile professionals. I think it's a great Web 2.0 machine. Battery life is kind of lousy, yet they're still working on that. You get 2 hours of battery life, and it's pretty strict 2 hours. They have an extra battery that you can buy that'll give you 4 hours. So with the two of those, you can get, you know, a good 6 hours if you want. Again, you can go the operating system on this $499 model is Linux. So it runs, Linux is known for running in a very small footprint. So it runs well. One of the first things I did was replace that with Ubuntu. It used SUSE Linux, which wasn't running some of the more modern applications. So it's not a trivial process, but you can replace it with Ubuntu. They also sell models for more money, of course, that run XP. I actually installed XP on this one as well, and it worked pretty well. Or Vista, and they come with larger drives and more memory and so on and so forth. So if you're in the market for something like that, super portable, I think the price is good, really solid machine, check out the HP 2133 Mini Note, and we'll put a link,
Martin,
to that. Yeah.
One thing I didn't hear you mention was the fact that it's wireless. I'm assuming that it's wireless.
Absolutely.
All right.
Totally wireless.
Good.
Yep. And I think you can also install the cellular cards, you know, the little USB dongle, so that you're, you know, 100%, almost 100% always online. So in that way, it works. It works really well. So just throw a little hardware pick out there for you this week.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, that whole storage thing is changing too, I think. And that sounds like, even though that's not got a lot of space on it, most of the times you would have kids saving documents while Google Docs, they'd be out there, but or Wikis would be out there. But if you do things on Word and you save them, kids have their account that they send stuff to the server. So the server's really doing the saving on site, not the computer.
And the server's doing the backup and everything else too.
Right. Yeah. And then we're finding that the only problem we have is if we're doing more and more video and audio stuff, and then so we've been getting large hard drives just to, and when they're doing those kind of projects, the storage for those has to go there.
Right.
So this would be a cool thing to hook up with other things we already have in place. That does sound like a really good solution.
Yeah, it's more, it's again, more moving toward the, you know, the terminal, you know, the headless,
yeah,
you know, approach of in the cloud computing. But again, you can get it, you know, built out with a little bit more beefy, you know, hardware and use it like a traditional laptop. But that kind of defeats the purpose in my mind. So something to consider. And I think you'll see other products coming out like this. I'm sure Apple will be throwing out a mini notebook at some point. They have their Adobe, their MacBook Air. That isn't,
yeah,
that is much bigger than this device, but it's certainly
right.
thin. But
way too fragile to have 24 kids in a room.
Oh yeah,
handling.
I can't even imagine. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need something a little bit more rugged. So.
Right.
All right. Our Wells.net feature of the week, Sally. What would you like us to look at today?
Well, I'm going to point our listeners to the Sunday School teacher training that's available out on our Wells.net university site. This training's put together by the Office of Youth Discipleship and just an excellent resource for Sunday School teachers. School is back in session and Sunday School is back in session as well. And many of our Sunday School teachers are volunteers. They're looking for you know, resources to equip them to do their job. And what you'll find on this site is 20 different training modules on everything about Sunday school, you know, starting with should I be teaching, learning the way children learn, partnering with parents, teaching techniques. It's all there. So if you want to check that out, you're going to find it at wells.net/jump/WNUSS training. And when you go to that link, you are going to be required to create a Wells.net University account. And that's just how the site functions. It keeps track of, you know, what you've done on the site and things like that. So you can go back and look at that and participate in discussion boards and things like that on the site.
Great. And there's no charge, right, Sally? It's free?
Absolutely.
Okay. And you just have to go there and so you get an account and you're done.
That's right.
Go. Okay, great.
Loads of resources. Great stuff.
Super. On our community feedback area, we had a number of people sending in information to us. In fact, we don't even have time to share it all in our show this week, but let's pick a few, Sally, that our listeners might like to hear about.
Sure. We heard from Cindy Krieger. She's over in Michigan, and she sent us a quick link to a list of open source software that's used in Michigan libraries. So just a really cool list. It's got a variety of things on it, and if you're a school media person or a librarian or just a classroom teacher, you might find resources on this list that you can make use of. So check out the link from Cindy.
Wow, and then, I'm just
Martin,
looking at that now, Sally. That's
okay.
There is a ton of stuff there. I mean, it's
right.
It's not just a handful of apps. I mean, there's probably 5, 6, 10 things per letter of the alphabet. So huge,
right.
Huge resource.
I think I'm going to try out some of them. Mm-hmm. I saw some things that I hadn't seen before, so there's always new things to learn about.
Yep, and interesting enough, the Michigan, I don't know what the C stands for, but it's MLC.
Oh.
MLCnet.org, so Michigan Library, what is it? I'm just going to go to the site here. Consortium, Michigan Library Consortium. The other MLC.
There you go.
Okay.
Great initials. One more that I wanted to mention, I thought it was really interesting, Martin. You and I heard from Anna, who's a KML student,
mm-hmm.
and she's in a religion class where she was asked to do a presentation on technology in the church. So I was happy to respond to her with some answers to various questions, how's technology used in the church, and what are benefits and downfalls to it, and things like that. But I think it's just really encouraging that at Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School, at least, their religion class students are looking at this, you know. So here we are training our future leaders in the church, and they're having them to pause and look at the concept of technology in the church. And so very encouraging to hear from Anna.
Great. Yep. Keep the comments coming. And again, reminder of our promo, 414-375-2334 is our voicemail line. If you have digital devices in your classroom you'd like to share with us and how you use them, please call. If you have any other comments about the show or suggested topics, that would be the line you could use as well, or visit our website at wellstech.wells.net for just a whole host of other ways that you can get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you and have you join the conversation. So keep the community feedback coming. Well, ladies, great show. Thanks again for confabbing once again. We will meet again next week, and we'll have an interview next week with Pastor Mark Cares, a pastor in Nampa, Idaho, about his first foray into blogging, especially as he's trying to meet the needs of a ministry to the Mormons. So very interesting interview, so tune in next week for that. Let's close the show with the music of Mike Wessendorf, our Wells featured artist for this week, his song Prelude to Praise from his album Run Boy Run. Thanks everybody for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
Promises fulfilled, for His grace beyond all measure, for Jesus' sacrifice, the payment for my sin, for my life paid the price, that I might learn to sing praises to my God and King. Let me sing praises. Worthy is your name on high. We consider your great love. Hallelujah. Tell all